Hello friends and welcome to the Totally Scottish Football Show. Andrew Slaven isn't here this week, but fear not, he is alive as far as we know. Instead, you are stuck with me, JJ Bull, football writer from Telegraph, and you're incredibly professional. And also say I'm tired from the weekend, I'm your host this week. Andrew says he'll return to the podcast once he's achieved his lifelong dream of riding the Loch Ness Monster. And when he says riding, I'll say good luck to you, sir. This week on the show, we'll probably have to talk about Neil Lennon's new old job. Are Celtic still on for a treble? Who can stand in their way? Could it be the Highlanders? In the Scottish Cup, there can be only one, and it is usually Celtic. We'll chat about Inverness and speak to top Cali Thistle man and current first team coach Barry Wilson about their win over Dundee United. In the Premiership, St Mirren win thanks to Flynn. And in League Two, Peter Heed are flying. We're going to have a wee discussion with assistant manager, or assistant to the manager, Davey Nicholls. Alongside me in the studio from Copa 90, it's video producer extraordinaire Laura Brannan.
Hello, what did I do to deserve that?
You just were here. And joining us this week, drafted in like a free transfer to cover for injuries, it's European football journalist and Scottish human man, Kieran Canning.
Oh, hi.
Hello, Kieran.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm all right. As I mentioned, I am slightly tired. I had a busy weekend. Did you have a nice time? Was it you chucking Buckfast to people?
Obviously. If I am a real Scottish man, as you say, that this is what real Scottish men do.
Is it? So we don't really have Buckfast.
You're too far north.
Yeah.
You are. I hope this is not a pejorative term. You are what we would refer to in the west coast of Scotland as a chuchter.
I am a chuchter because I'm from the countryside, yeah. So the toons are our chuchters.
I hail from the Buckfast capital of the world in Lanarkshire. I can't say I've tasted it very often, but I am a fae with what happens to humans when we consume the Buckfast, and it is not very pretty, as we saw on Saturday.
It's powerful stuff. The president of FIFA could have been anywhere this weekend. El Clasico, the North London Derby at Wembley, the Copacabana. But instead, Gianni Infantino was in Cove on Saturday to see the Wee Rangers beat Nairn County 3-0 in the Highland League. Imagine if Cove were up against Fort William. It would be a sight to see. It'd be pretty cool if FIFA were visiting, actually, Fort William. I would like that a lot. Infantino was up in Aberdeen because they had the IFAB AGM, which is that referees convention, basically, isn't it? And they discuss all the rules, rule changes.
Yeah, it's basically the annual show of how Scottish football is still some way relevant to the world football at large. Somehow.
What good that it has hotels?
No, because somehow Scotland has one of the four sort of casting votes on rule changes
that
to cover the whole of football, yeah, because it's Scotland, England, Northern Ireland, and Wales.
Huh.
And this is why it was in Aberdeen this time round.
There you go. Well, he was invited to the game, Infantino was, this is, by SFA President Alan McRae, who's an honorary president at Cove.
Yet more evidence of the Rangers' bias in the SFA, even if it's Cove Rangers.
Tinfoil hats on.
Mirallas can't get there, but another back post is Joe Worrell. Sent off in last season's FA Cup against Arsenal. On the score sheet in this season's Scottish Cup quarter-final.
1-1, it finished at Pittodrie in the Scottish Cup quarter-final, so it goes to a replay at Ibrox, which suits Aberdeen because they are the away form team. They've won, I think it's 400 games in a row now. The one thing I found out about this week, so because that home form is so bad at Aberdeen, they stayed in a hotel before the game, even though it was at home. So they don't normally do that.
And trained on the pitch the day before,
yeah,
which upset Steven Gerrard a lot. Alfredo Morelos did not get sent off, but he did try.
Because before the game, I was looking to see if there was odds on him not getting sent off. Because I thought, everyone's expecting it to happen, so this will be the one time it doesn't.
Well, I know this is very rare, and I spent the entire season just... I mean, refereeing has been awful this season. However...
What do they call him?
All of them. However, Aberdeen versus Rangers was superb. Kevin Clancy, I think, got absolutely everything right. Completely fair. Didn't stand for any nonsense, didn't seem to be taken in by the crowd or the players. I thought he's fantastic. Well done! Sammy Cosgrove Ballon d'Or has now scored 18 goals this season. He scored a penalty. All his penalties go at the same side.
And the keeper always seems to get a touch on it, but just not enough.
Why can't they stop it?
Once again, though, McGregor did keep Rangers in the cup with some really good second half saves. Rangers are weird because they seem to now have got into this habit of absolutely hammering the bottom six is what we're looking for. The past three or four games, scored five against Hamilton, smashed Dundee midweek, but still really struggling when it comes to this, particularly away games against the better teams in the league. Drew and lost at Kilmarnock, drew at Holmes and Johnson, which is a bit of an anomaly, but I'm not really sure if Jarrod's got the right balance there, and particularly the fact that they spent so much money, well, at least in wages, on in bringing in Defoe and Davis, and neither of them can get a game.
Yeah, I thought Rangers were really bad in that first half. They didn't turn up at all. And Aberdeen did, and they looked right up for it. Really played with real determination, a lot of energy, but it's good shape. Shane Gary McKay-Steven had to go off injured. That looked really sore, actually, that kick to the back of the leg, but he's gone to hospital, and apparently it's not as bad as first feared, but I don't know what that means, whether he's got anything wrong with him.
It was an ankle injury he was suffering from before, wasn't it? It was a penalty, though, which is kind of what you're saying. The referee did get a lot of decisions right. It was a penalty. And then you're looking at his the bookings he did give for simulation. Morelos, definite dive.
His decision, yeah, he got it dead right.
McLaren, definite dive.
Yeah,
and it's so disappointing because I assume over the course of this podcast, this is not going to be the only dives that we're talking about. We're seeing it far too often now, not just this weekend, but it's building up more and more, and it's the same players as well that are doing it.
I don't know why you hate it. I mean, it's not that bad.
Well, you don't know why I hate diving. It's cheating.
Well, yeah, I hate it when it's blatant and it's... But it, you know what I mean? I like a bit of...
You like a bit of
deviance.
That's no...
I'm also in the deviance corner. I never understand why people get more angry about diving than, like, a sneaky short tug or, like... Or appealing for a throw-in when you know it's not your throw-in.
Yeah.
It's also being devious.
There's loads of nonsense going on all the time.
Pulling a shirt is just a bit of a physical game, and we like it being physical, but diving is just plain cheating. Scotland have not qualified on so many occasions because of blatant cheats.
Exactly.
And we should learn how to dive.
I am broken as a result of that, and I still maintain that I would rather my team lost, honestly, than won by cheating.
No, that is the attitude of why Scotland have not qualified in a major tournament in so long.
I totally agree. This is the kind of clever stuff. It's not clever, but it's just what everyone does. There's absolutely no point to be this brave, valiant, look at me, I play by the rules.
That doesn't
make
it okay just because everyone else is doing it. If everyone in the
You're saying it's okay, but everyone else does it, so you need to be smart.
That's like saying, oh, everyone's racist and have sing-taking songs, but it doesn't make it okay.
Diving in a football game is not the same as being racist. That is not the same thing. I did enjoy, so I didn't know about this actually, but there's a banner on display, and I think it was in the south stand at the Aberdeen game. So Aberdeen fans, when Dons were doing really well in Europe, like we were drawn with Bayern Munich and teams like that, not that long ago, this is when I think it was the early 2000s, I think I'm talking about, 2002.
Yeah, like 2000, and what year did Rangers get to the UEFA Cup final?
I can't remember.
2008.
Yeah, it was around that year, because it was a year that Rangers got to the UEFA Cup final, Celtic got to the Champions League last 16, and Aberdeen got beyond Christmas, which was the best season in Scottish football in Europe for
It was
decades.
Heady times. My pals all went and had great fun. I didn't go. I think it was like a lucky charm to not go. Anyway, there was a song that went around the Aberdeen fans during that trip where they were singing Your Ma's a Mattress to the, I think it's like an old like, da, 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 that song, whatever that one is.
Well, the Great Escape.
Yeah, Great Escape, that's the one. So they had a banner at Pittodrie which read in perfect Spanish, Morelos, your ma's a mattress.
Yeah, as Spanish insults of the mother go, surprisingly, it's like quite tame. As I know
that's
from my
like
6 years in Spain.
I'd never heard this term before. And I saw a few people kind of getting up in arms about it, saying this is outrageous and this is stamp it out of football. We see people chucking things at players. We see like things being chanted in the stands. And yeah, sure, we need to stamp things like that out. But if you're holding up a banner just to aggravate the opposition player and hopefully get to them in some way, I'm all for that.
I agree. I don't think it should become anything evil. And I think that just is on the line of not being... It's so silly that it's not directly an attack.
Yeah, because you're not saying something so bad. It's not like...
He's just laughing like he's
not
laughing.
It's not like something like that. It's a cheeky dig, and it's in the Scottish sense of humour. Now, albeit Morelos might not get the Scottish sense of humour, I might take great offence to that, but that is down to the individual, and that's probably what the fans are wanting anyway. But I just see that as... That is all part of this whole Scottish football is hilarious, and yeah, go for it.
In the words of Anchorman, let's leave the mothers out of this.
Well, we should talk about the Rangers' goal. They equalised just after half time. I think they were much better in the second half. Don't think they really changed much in the way they were playing, but they just were better. Joe Worrall's finish is phenomenal. It's like a little... McManaman did it as well. That weird style of volley. He did it in the Champions League final as well, I think, McManaman.
Oh, yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Joe Worrall's not quite the same.
Yeah, that's what... Yeah, Worrall clearly didn't know what he was doing. Ball just came off. No. Now, I think Rangers better in the second half precisely because they got the goal so early. It sort of settled them down a bit. What surprised me, though, is that how many chances Aberdeen then had thereafter. You think once Rangers got back on level terms... they would get more of a foothold in the game, yeah, and become more the dominant side. For it was more, Rangers were more dangerous on the counter-attack, even at 1-1, and Aberdeen had plenty of chances. And I know we were sort of joking earlier on saying how Aberdeen do have such a good away record and poor home form, so they might fancy their chances at Ibrox, but yeah, they had the chances there to put it away yesterday. And given that Aberdeen normally average at 1-1 at Ibrox a decade, doing it twice in the in a season might be a bit difficult.
The replay for this game now, though, clashes with Champions League last 16 ties, just like the replay between Rangers and Kilmarnock in the last round, so it won't be live on TV.
Sucks. Again, from my experience working in the Spanish football, you can have it on TV.
Yeah.
You just can't have it at the time when the Champions League game's being played. In Spain, it was quite often because either Real Madrid or Barcelona were playing in the Club World Cup around Christmas time, so they would miss a league match and would have to make it up in February time.
Yeah.
And they would start the game either before or after, given the Spanish tendency to start games late, but normally before, so they'd have a kickoff around about like 6 o'clock and then finish just in time for the Champions League game starting.
So if they change the kickoff time, they could show it on TV?
Yes, but I think this is good actually, because it's for, like, for once they're actually prioritising the match-going fans by not having it at, you know, 5:30 or whatever and having it on TV.
I can't go.
There was a French game on last time, there was a Champions League fixture on at the same time. But I think it's just the Federation will get fined.
Yeah, it's a silly
and they're
league,
happy
though,
to pay for that, because it's the French Federation, they're not exactly short of money.
It's a silly one-team league, is that?
It's very precious, isn't it? I think it's very precious, the Champions League, to be like, no, we're the only ones that matter.
Yeah.
I mean, I would much rather see Rangers versus Aberdeen in the seventh clash of the season than watch the Champions League.
You're damn right, Laura. Is it 2015 all over again? Are Cali Thistle about to win the Scottish Cup? Because the Highlanders are going back to Hampden. They won the all-championship affair at Tannadice 2-1, knocking out Dundee United to advance to the semi-finals. We're joined now by first-team coach and Inverness legend, Barry Wilson. Hello, Barry, how you doing?
I'm great, thanks.
So Dundee United beat Inverness in midweek at Tannadice in the championship. What was the feeling coming into that game on the weekend?
Yeah, we were quietly confident. I know, you know, we didn't play our best on Tuesday night. We made a few changes, tried a different formation just to kind of put United off the centre a little bit, to be honest. And, we lost 1-0. There was nothing in the game except a rash challenge and a soft penalty on Tuesday night that separated the sides. So we were quite confident going in. And we felt that if we were our best there with Storm, then we would gradually get into the game. Actually, you know, it worked opposite. You know, we started the game really, really well, got in front, unlucky not to go a couple of goals up at half time, you know, and then another contentious decision sort of got United back in the game. But I thought the boys showed great character to come back, and then, you know, having the goal disallowed offside, which was borderline to say the least.
Oh, it was so tight that call, I can't believe that one.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the linesman. Had the linesman been on the other side and the first person he sees as the young fullback Seaman, then it might have been different, but he's obviously the first person he sees is Nathan Austin. And as I said, it was a tight one, but we just felt that we weren't getting there up in the green with those decisions. And then pops up with a very brave header. He's not known for his header, I believe, but it was a fantastic feeling and great scenes at the end.
Aaron Doran, I thought he was excellent all the way through that game. Was the setup of the team kind of built to try and get the most out of him in that game? Was he the key, do you think, in the planning for it?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, we rested him on Tuesday night, and although the formation that worked well on Tuesday, we felt it was really important to get Aaron back into the team. You know, he gives us that little bit of creativity that every team needs. And like you said, I thought he was fantastic. Thoroughly deserved his man of the match, and and very appropriate that he managed to get the winner. I think he was a handful all afternoon for the young fullback.
Speaking of scenes at the end, John Robertson was, I heard one commentator say, coptering all over the pitch. He enjoyed that one, didn't he?
He did. He did enjoy it. He doesn't often show his emotion that way, you know, so it was nice. It really was. You know, it's been, you know, it's been a tough season. You know, we've been well documented the amount of draws that we've had in the league, and we've also had two in the cup as well, so it was looking like another one, which would just give us another headache with another fixture. So it was just brilliant. It was brilliant to see the manager and the players celebrate like that. You know, they came through a hard game in the last round, two games against Ross County, got through in penalties, and then they said injury time winner. It's been fantastic. We're all now looking forward to the semi-final draw tonight.
But you mentioned the number of draws you've had. So it's only 6 defeats in 26 games in the league. Do you think that the Cup sort of suits you in that sense, that you're such a hard team to beat, that anything's possible in the semis and potentially the final?
Yeah, I think so. Like you said, you know, we've been a hard team to beat this season. I mean, even those defeats, I mean, I think 3 of them have probably came in the last 2 or 3 minutes. You know, we've been on the opposite end of late goals. We're well organised. We've got a good squad, of players, although not in size. You know, we don't have the biggest of squads. We're always filling the bench up with our under-18 side. If you're in games, you've always got a chance, you know, and you know, as I showed yesterday, you've always got something always happens in the Cup, and it seems to be Wimbledon in the Scottish Cup, doesn't it? There's always something seems to be happening from way back in the days.
Because it's changed heaps, right? Because you signed when they were third division side and played your last game the club 12 years later, and they were a Premiership club. It's a pretty nuts rise to be part of. What are you involved with them now? You work with the under-18s as well, don't you, at the moment?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm head of professional development. So basically I take the under-18s, but I'm also first-team coach as well. So it's a dual role, which keeps me busy, thoroughly enjoying it, and just delighted that the manager asked me back in the summer when Brian left for St Mirren.
And you obviously don't have favourites, but if you did, is there any special young talents you think will have a big career coming through just now?
We do have, we've got 2 or 3. I mean, our young boys are well top of their league at current time. Probably, you know, we've got young Dan Mackay, who's made, I think, it's 25 first-team appearances now. Young Roddy McGregor as well, who's made 4 or 5 appearances, and likes of Cameron Harper, who's also, you know, had a taste of first team, and they're all getting little, you know, they've all been involved in squads nearly as well, and the manager's been great with them. You know, not scared to put them on. In fact, on Sunday we had a lad who's just 16, he's still at school, young Lewis Hyde, didn't make his debut, but he got on the bench for the first time, you know, so it's brilliant. And you know, just the fact that we do carry a small squad gives these guys the opportunity, but they only get it if they deserve it.
Dundee United was another one with weird dives, isn't it?
Yeah, that's maybe another one I was referring to. We'll be talking about later on. Paul McMullen, I'm sorry, this is not the first time he's done this. It is almost week in, week out. Okay, maybe that's a slight exaggeration, but
how do you fix this, Laura?
He's no stranger to this. It's getting to the point where
capital punishment.
Chuck fuck-fast at him.
See, if you're a serial diver, get him off. Send him off. Don't do this yellow card nonsense. Just get him straight off.
But what if you get it wrong? It's like capital punishment, isn't it?
Oh, can you imagine a Willie Collum game? There'll be about 6 people left on the field.
He is one of the most guilty players in the entire SPFL for diving. And why are refs not clamping down on it more? And why are the clubs not clamping down on it more?
I think it's very hard to call, and some people are very clever.
That was clearly not a penalty. I don't think there's anyone apart from the referee who says that was a penalty.
I absolutely loved the absolute scenes at the end of this game when John Robertson's coming on the pitch, because it sounds very like cliche heavy, but it clearly meant so much to them. They were absolutely delighted.
Well, the interesting thing was, I mean, Barry was talking about there how Inverness made changes for the midweek game, clearly prioritising the cup, whereas Robbie Nielsen was like very clear. I mean, I know it's easy to say after the game, but he was like, the league is our priority. We need to know, we were never going to win the Scottish Cup, so we need to just focus on, because I mean, for Dundee United, it's a bigger thing, but they are a size of club that should be in the Premiership.
Yeah. But I also feel as though they're still a long way off it. And they're, yes, they're doing better this season, and Robbie Nielsen has changed things around, yes. Yeah. But I still feel like the heart is not there. And it's not been there for a few years now, and it has been ripped right out of the club since they got relegated. And you look at it, even though Robbie Nielsen's turned it around, there's still a complete lack of leaders. There's just no oomph. There's no X factor about them when you watch them now.
I mean, they bought an entire new team in January, like 11 new players, and done like significantly better since then. So I think it's one of those situations. I know what you're saying, but they need to get back up and get a bit more revenue
They've got the team as well. They've got like Paulette and Fivey. It's another Aberdeen player that was in the team as well.
You can still have star players in the Championship and just be to that level, like the likes of Lauren Shankland at Ayr, or likes of Lewis Morgan when he was at St Mirren and they were running right in the Championship. So as you're saying, they've got Mark Reynolds, they've got Fraser Fivey, and players who have played at the Premiership and should be taking that step down to then be the leaders in the team to take them right back up again. And so far, I'm still not seeing who is that standout leader.
But then to buy leaders like that, they are usually either expensive or they're kind of old and a bit rubbish, basically, because they're old and they've lost their pace.
Or haven't played a lot, like a few of their signings in January. You know, guys that have a Premiership track record but had moves, haven't really worked out and coming back.
Exactly.
To
and
he had
Reynolds. Football. Reynolds was going nuts at his teammates during that whole game because they weren't doing the simple things. But they're not young. They're sort of mid-20s. Like, you've got Cammy Smith and Paulett, you know, they're players who you think are young forever, even when they're 40. You're like, they've always got potential.
Hello, I'm Emma Bullimore.
And I'm Mark Jeffries.
We host the Series Link podcast for TV fans by TV fans. And this week we have a very special guest.
We managed to sit down with the one and only Ricky Gervais.
Jane went to Brighton once to visit her mum, and the boiler went and I didn't know how to do it. And I couldn't get the telly on. So I sat for 2 nights.
So she went for 2 days.
2 days. And and she came out and it was like... It was, honestly, it was like Castaway.
He talked to us about everything, including his new Netflix show, Afterlife, his love of dogs, and what he thinks of Twitter critics.
To be able to cast your leading lady as a German Shepherd was unbelievable for me. And I admit, I cast it on looks first, and then she backed up with a great personality.
Search Series Linked on your podcast app to hear the full interview with Ricky.
Two games in Edinburgh this week, 2 wins out of 2 for Neil Lennon back at Celtic. It's his old job that he wanted for a while. Second half goals from James Forrest and Scott Brown saw the Scottish Cup holders progress to the semi-finals with a 2-0 win at Hibs. But the headlines were dominated by a bottle of Buckfast because some chump threw a glass bottle made of glass onto the pitch towards Scott Sinclair while he was taking a corner. Which is not cool, guys.
Stop throwing things. It's that simple. We're seeing coins, bottles,
seats,
lighters.
You ever seen someone do it in real life?
Lighters.
In the stadium?
No, I haven't actually.
I've seen lighters in the stadium. I haven't seen anything.
I've seen flares and like smoke bombs and stuff when I was abroad working with Coffee 90, but I've not seen it in Scottish football, a game. I've not seen anything personally. I nearly got hit by a lighter once in Croatia. But it's just so brain dead. In what walk of life is it okay to throw things at each other?
The real big sort of topic of conversation at the moment in Scotland is strict liability or not. So at the moment, the clubs, even if you have bottles of Buckfast are thrown on, or in the past week, not to talk about the sectarian chanting, the clubs are not held liable. It's the individuals that are held liable. And the clubs are unlikely to change the rule, because if they are then found liable, then they are much more likely to be fined or have stands closed or possibly even points deducted. But there's now a bit more of a push towards trying to force the clubs to accept more responsibility.
Yeah, we were talking about this last week. Andrew Smith had a little chat with us on the phone about this whole stuff. It's kind of weird how things keep getting thrown. I've seen it once before. My best pal got coined. Someone threw a coin from the Celtic end to his when we were at a semi-final. He did not enjoy it. Not one bit. I don't know what kind of... I just don't know how much of a moron you are throwing stuff.
That's between fans then throwing things at each other.
Fans throwing things at fans.
Across the stands. Yes. I was saying this on Twitter earlier in the week. I just feel like if we keep going the way we're going, we're going to be watching football behind a net, because it's the only way to make sure that somebody's not injured. And this is it. People keep saying, when is this going to stop? When is this going to get addressed? Is it going to be when somebody actually gets hit? Because we're seeing it happen. It's coming very close. And until a player actually comes in contact, Hugh Dallas style, or knocked out or whatever, is anyone actually going to take action and stop this?
Another thing I just thought of with that strict liability, right? So say you see someone, say I see you, Kieran, chucking a bottle of Buckfast at Scott Sinclair. At this time, I happen to be a Hibs fan, and I see you do it. And if I report him, then the club will get points deducted. So I don't do that, because then I'm going to gub my own team.
But this is so that'd
be the wrong way to think.
The counter-argument to strict liability is that there should be more self-policing amongst fans, that particularly given the rising incidents that we're having in the past few weeks, that something needs to be done about it, and needs to be more fans pointing fingers
and
at their own fans.
It sounds totally right on paper, right? But then you think when you're actually in that situation, it's horrible having to grass up on someone. If they've been racist, I'm pretty sure I would just go and tell a steward something. But if there's someone throwing stuff, you think they're mental anyway.
But the thing is, are you actively going to get out your seat and walk down to a steward in front of them and point them out and point to them in the stand? Like, I don't know, is there some sort of discreet way of doing this where you can almost grass them up without them knowing? Like, you know, text a number of your actual seat and say, like, you
that's know. That's a good idea, make an app or something like that, yeah.
Like, you know, it's two seats down sort of thing, or this is the area. Like, can I home in on this kind of area, and you might find the person that's guilty, and then you're never known to be the one that's responsible for grassing them up.
Well, one person directly involved in this obviously is Neil Lennon, who had something chucked at him earlier in the season. He's back at Celtic, and he went back again somewhere else to Hibs for this game here.
Celtic really sort of stepped it up in the second half, took control, scored two very good goals. I mean, the first one from Forrest to get things going, it was an incredible strike. And now, as you were saying before the podcast, JJ, Scott Brown appears to be good again.
Yeah, I don't know how this has happened, because he was, not long ago, slow, tip-tap, nothing.
What, the last game before the winter break, the Rangers game that Celtic lost?
Well, remember, he was packing
awful.
His bags going to Australia. We're like, he's gone, he's done, his legs are gone. He is not a liability for Celtic, but he's just holding them back a bit. Now, he's absolutely brilliant. He looked fast.
I just feel like, okay, so he's had a wee bad spell of the season, but I don't think it's a case of he's became good again. I think it was he just had an off spell earlier in the season, and I'm looking at it from the other perspective.
I mean, I think he brings huge amounts. What he does bring, forget what he does on the ball, it's the stuff he brings off the ball to the team, the leadership, that sort of stuff.
Particularly at the moment. I think, I mean, Lennon and even Rodgers in his first Leicester press conference and justifying his decision to leave and stuff was saying how the state that he'd left Celtic in was actually very good, and like the leadership was there to take over, and mention Brown amongst that, and the fact that he has now decided to stay on for another couple of seasons might sort of help see Celtic through what's going to be, even if Lennon stays on and gets the job permanently, it's going to be a big summer of transition in terms of players. The one thing I would say, like, in terms of how the game went, Hibs were very disappointing. Like, they had a couple of shots in goal from long range, but they barely tested Scott Bain. And if you compare that to recent Hibs Celtic games when Lennon has been the manager, I mean, Rodgers didn't win at Easter Road in three attempts. I think it was like one draw and two defeats. And Hibs always seemed to score goals against Celtic, whereas the two games they've played since Lennon left in the league at Celtic Park and on Saturday, Celtic have won very comfortably.
Lennon set up Hibs to be quite aggressive against Celtic, didn't he? He tried to take the game to them a wee bit. What did Heckebottom do here? Did he do anything different from what Lennon would have done with Hibs?
They were sat off, they were more in sort of 3-5-2. The two up front never really got involved in the game very much. I mean, obviously, Camberry had a big point to prove given his falling out with Lennon towards the end at Hibs, and has caused Celtic problems in the past. But they didn't really get the service into them. And it just seemed a bit too passive. As you say, like, when Hibs have played well against Celtic, they've pressed them high and really put them under pressure. But particularly in the second half, it was just too easy for Celtic to play in and around them.
Yeah, I felt like they were just giving Celtic too much respect. They were giving them far too much space. See, for Scott Brown's goal, as much as it was a great goal, he should never have been given that amount of space to move. Nobody was closing them down.
Just like, I know you like the tactical changes,
I
JJ.
Love the tactical changes. Tell me.
Celtic started off with Edouard is playing as a kind of number 10, and he was terrible. And after about 20-25 minutes, they changed it and moved Burks to the right, which is actually, I think, the first time I've seen Burke playing in his kind of more natural position as a right winger at Celtic. Forrest is number 10, Edouard up front, and then it was from that sort of number 10 position that that Forrest sort of got the space to score the opening goal. So that
when he runs to the middle of the pitch. He's good. Obviously, he's good wide because he's basically a winger. But when he runs at folk through the middle, they don't know what to do. How do you stop him? Because you either foul him or trip him up, or you have to retreat, and that's where you get the space. So
obviously, in this latest episode of Scottish Football Job Swap, we've got Brendan Rodgers left Celtic.
Did he?
Yes.
Oh.
Did you hear about this?
It crossed my path last week.
So, yeah. The Celtic fans took it really well. He's traded immortality for mediocrity. He wasn't happy with that. He's been in the paper since saying that he's one of them. He's a Celt really at heart, but he had to make a decision with his head. Did he make things worse for Celtic fans with what he's been saying? Could he possibly made it any better? Is it that bad a thing?
No, I think they're just laughing at him, to be honest. And I think they're laughing at him even more after the last minute defeat to Watford as well. Did you see Watford's tweet? They welcomed their newfound support north of the border, the little green love heart. But no, I think no matter what he says now, the damage has been done, and Celtic fans are just petty laughing at him almost.
Kieran Canning.
The problem with Rodgers has always been, whether it's, you know, way going back to, there's a Watford fan in my office who came and sought my counsel on his latest decision because he did the same thing to Watford to go to Reading.
Yeah.
And at that point said that Reading was the only club he would leave for because he had coached there previously. I spoke to another colleague who told me about his first press conference at Liverpool, where he talks about sitting on his granddad's floor watching a Liverpool FA Cup final from the 80s and how Liverpool had been such a big part of his upbringing, and, you know, he had such a tight tie to Liverpool. Then he comes to Celtic, obviously, his dream job, in his own words, would still be there if he'd followed his heart. I think the problem with Rodgers has always been he talks a bit too much and doesn't help himself. On the other hand, I do think the reaction, or overreaction, as I would put it, to, from the Celtic fans' point of view, has been very overblown. Like, it was quite well known among sort of more well-informed Celtic fan media that that Rodgers was off at the end of the season, probably to Leicester. The fact that he's probably made the wrong decision in bringing that forward by a couple of months isn't great, but I think the banners and some of the chants and stuff like that have been a bit over the top.
I think it'll be forgotten pretty soon.
I don't know, they did.
No?
Was it a banner 2 games in a row? What are we going to get this for the rest of the season? A new slogan every week?
No, I think there might be something, if they did do the treble, there might be something on the final third of the season.
But if they do it, that's really poor. You've just made history and won a treble. This is obviously hypothetical that we know is going to happen. But if you're sitting there, you're going to enjoy your team winning. Don't go and have a dig at somebody who left, 3 months ago?
One caveat to the treble is...
I keep hearing David Bowie every time you say it.
Neil Lennon's record at Hampden as a Celtic manager. He did win a few cups.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
Right?
Neil Lennon's record at Hampden
as a Celtic manager. Right?
Tell me.
As an interim manager, as he is now, lost to Ross County in the semi-final of the Scottish Cup in 2010, lost to Rangers in the League Cup final in 2011, lost to Kilmarnock in the League Cup final in 2012, lost to St Mirren in the League Cup semi-final in 2013. So if Ross County, Rangers, Kilmarnock and St Mirren could do it back then, maybe Inverness, Rangers or Aberdeen, Partick or Hearts can do it in 2019.
I do feel like there's a little bit of a... like, it almost seems a tiny bit vulnerable. It's just not the
same. Hold on a minute. It's very easy to twist your stats here. Yes, he's lost 5 games to Hampden. He's won 6, though. And he's won some trophies on the way.
But, yeah. Like, 6 out of 11 for a Celtic manager isn't...
I mean,
Rodgers didn't lose any. To agree with you, I do think coming through those 2 games... I mean, those are two of the toughest games that he's going to face between now and the end of the season in the past week, and to come through in sort of different circumstances. The one where you get the last-minute winner and you get the high from that, and then you get the better performance, more control, very good victory. And as I say, I mean, 2 grounds where even Rodgers of Celtic, for all the domestic dominance... have struggled in the past couple of seasons, that could just launch Celtic into this last bit of the season. And really, they just need the next couple of league games. They've got Aberdeen at home, they've got Rangers at home coming up. They haven't dropped a point at home all season. If they win them, the league is done and they can concentrate on the cup.
Maybe we should go around the grounds in the SPFL. Here is Neil White with the headlines from the Championship, League One and Two.
And how about Dunfermline? At the start of February, they were one very bad week away from the relegation playoff position at the bottom of the Championship, and now, 4 consecutive wins later, they are in the final playoff position at the other end of the table. On Saturday, they beat Queen of the South 1-0 thanks to a Ryan Blair 20-yarder. Blair is one of two smart loans they secured right at the end of the winter window. Blair came in from Swansea City and Bruce Anderson arrived from Aberdeen. They have made a difference. Six defeats on the spin in all competitions for Queen of the South now, and all of a sudden they are by no means safe from relegation. Neither are Falkirk, but their 1-1 draw at Morton on Friday night has them eighth and unbeaten in 2019. League One and Dumbarton continue to blast their way out of trouble like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Commando. A Ross Forbes penalty and a goal by Dom Thomas to add to his hat-trick last week gave Dumbarton a 2-0 win over Arbroath for only the league leader's third defeat of the season. Forfar go second after they cruised to a 3-0 win over East Fife. Raith Rovers had to come back from 2-0 down at halftime to rescue a point at Stranraer. But it remains Arbroath for the title at a skoosh, and now in order, Forfar, Raith and East Fife for the playoffs. There's a 4-point gap after that group. At the other end, the bottom two met, and get this, Brechin led early at Stenismuir. Then Steny had Russell Dingwall sent off midway through the first half. Stenismuir then equalised, had Connor Duffy sent off with 19 minutes left, but with 9 men held on for a draw that keeps the gap between these two at 2 points. League Two, and for the first time in forever, there's daylight at the top. Peterhead registered their third 1-0 win in 7 days, edging a tight derby against Elgin City with an early goal from Paddy Boyle, the left-back's first for the club. Meanwhile, in Cumbernauld, David Goodwillie's penalty was the only thing between Clyde and Edinburgh City, despite Clyde playing out the last 26 minutes without the services of Tom Lang after the defender's second red card of the season. And that means Clyde go above Edinburgh City into second, 4 behind the leaders, Peterhead. At the bottom, Albion Rovers were 3 minutes from their first win in 20 games before Callum Anderson of Berwick Rangers ruined it all and ensured they are still utterly rooted to the bottom of the table. Who will they face in the playoff of doom? East Kilbride lead the Lowland League by 10 and have a game in hand. And in the Highland League, Cove Rangers are in the box seat, especially if they can win the 2 games in hand they have over Brora Rangers. Finally, at the bottom of the Highland League table, friends of the pod, Fort William, winless in 2 calendar years at this point, were in front against Wick in wet and windy conditions when the Fort William keeper, Finlay Burstall, made a save and came up complaining of mud in his eyes. As treatment continued to the temporarily sightless custodian, the referee decided he'd seen enough of this madness and called the game off. Fort William's long, long wait continues.
As you just heard, Peterhead extended their lead at the top of League Two. Their management team are no strangers to leading them to the title. We are joined now by assistant manager Davey Nichols. Davey, how are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you. And yourself?
Oh, just absolutely fine. Sort of. I'm okay. I'll say I'm okay, yeah. It was a busy weekend. It was a tight 1-0 win over Elgin in the derby on Saturday for you, so you've had a busier weekend than I have. It's your third 1-0 win of the week. You must be very happy with that solidity.
Yeah, we are. The fact we're not conceding any goals in the last 3 games has been really good. The only thing we've been looking for is a bit better performances, but I think 2 of the games, the conditions, played a major part with the win, the high wins. But all we're just delighted to get 3 points, you know, and get to the top of the league and stay there, you know, because the last couple of times we've got there, we've relinquished the lead quite quickly, within a week, but you know, the boys solidified that the weekend and managed to stay top, you know, which was excellent.
It's been Peterhead and Edinburgh City as the top two basically the whole season, but now you've got Clyde muscling in. Do you feel like you've got form at exactly the right time this part of the season to push for that, to stay top now?
Definitely. We always knew Clyde were going to be a major threat, given the their management team and as a club, but also, you know, the players have got, like you said, David Goodwillie, who brings great experience and no lack of quality to their team. And Edinburgh, James McDonough, who I know well, they've had a fantastic season as well, and they've been pushing quite hard. But you know, it's we've had to go on a hell of a run to, you know, get to the top of the league, and the boys will be determined not to give that up, you know.
Your left back Paddy Boyle getting his first goal as well at the weekend. You need everyone pitching in, don't you, when you're going for this title?
Definitely. Although Paddy was taking a wee bit of stick Saturday, you know, we thought he was trying to cross it, but he managed to go in, which was great. But
and was he?
He doesn't come up with a lot of goals, but no, it was a vital goal at a good time. As I said, the conditions on Saturday were, at times they were farcical, but we managed to dig it out. And as you say, it's great that everybody's contributing, you know, with goals. If it goes all over the pitch, and it means we're not relying too heavily on, you know, the likes of Rory and Derek Lyle. You know, Shane's obviously come in, which is a major boost to the squad as well. So hopefully these guys can see us through at the end of the season.
What does this mean for the club to get promoted and for yourself as well to be involved with that success?
Oh, it's massive. You know, certainly it was very fortunate in my playing career to win a couple of league titles with different clubs. But as a coach, it's different because you can't even really affect it, you know, as much because you're on the sidelines. It's brilliant, you know. For the club, it's a great club to be at. Absolutely fantastic. The people that run the club, they work tirelessly, and I know, you know, Jim works really hard as well, and the backroom staff are there to support him and the players. And if we get the rewards at the end of the season, then it makes it all worthwhile, you know.
Is Cy Ferry asked you for an interview yet?
No, I wouldn't actually go on his show. There's no way I would go on because
is that right?
He would set me up.
You'll
set me up.
I'm professionals, is that right?
Yeah, you know. You know, Simon's doing really well with that side. Side thing he's doing. It's working fantastically for him. But you know, certainly on the park, he has different classes. He's a best professional to young boys, and they should actually look at him and use him as an example because of his determination to win and how much he puts into the game, you know.
So you and Jim McNally, the longest serving, I guess, joint management team in Scotland, but over 7 years you've been in charge?
Yeah, 7 and a bit, I think it is. But certainly that's a lot of testament to the club as well, because certainly with the travelling that we do, you love the club, and the people running it are different class. They're second to none that I've ever met in the game, and I've been lucky enough to be involved for over 30 years now, and they are a special bunch of people, you know.
You're listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show.
I'm talking big data. I'm talking St Mirren 1, Livingston 0. This is the Premiership game on Saturday. Everyone else having cup fun. St Mirren secured their first win of 2019. Can you believe it? Ryan Flynn with an 89th minute winner against Livingston. 3 matches unbeaten for the Buddies. And they're now a point behind Dundee in 11th. So it's pretty good little win for them there.
Ryan Flynn's first goal of the season. First Premiership goal as well. Shows you a bit of persistence pays off for himself personally and for the team, fighting on to the 89th minute. Thing is, they're keeping the pressure on Dundee as well since they've picked up their form. St Mirren are showing they're not going to lie down and let this gap grow any bigger.
Well, yeah, the interesting thing is that the three bottom teams, who particularly in the first part of the season were all hopeless, now are starting to get a little bit of form going just at the right time. So like,
always happens this, doesn't it? At the end of the season they start being good. It's weird.
And also you've got the split coming. I mean, we're still 5 games away from the split, and then they all start playing each other, so there's even greater chance for points to be won. St Mirren played Dundee at home in a couple of weeks time before the split as well, so they've still got to play each other twice. Yeah. So that'll have a big bearing on who goes down and who goes into the playoff place. But the thing is, with the fact that now they're all getting a little bit of form going, earlier in the season I would have thought, you know, whoever comes out of the Championship playoffs is going to fancy their chances, whereas now, at least if whoever finishes second bottom goes into the playoffs without and not in terrible form, then they stand a better chance of staying up.
St Mirren didn't have Greg Tansey for this game because they played the SFA lottery and appealed. I don't know if you saw Greg Tansey's tackle on
Dicamona. He only nearly destroyed one knee. So in the SFA's, you know, rule book, that might be enough to get him off. Some people say, why did they appeal it? Because it was such an obvious, dangerous tackle.
Yeah.
But given the season that we've had, you would appeal anything.
That's exactly it, yeah.
I mean, if the guy that threw the Buckfast bottle got like a 5-game ban, he'd probably appeal it and get off with it. So, you know, given the SFA's track record this season. So, you know, this is the SFA lottery you've got to play.
Political humour. things that's not so funny. It's one win in 11 games in all comps. I keep hearing people say now, all comps. All competitions, that's the word. Use that. For Livingston, they're probably not going down. Doesn't seem like it anyway. What are they going to do this season? What is the point of Livingston now?
They're just floating around.
Look up where they're going to go on their holidies. Yeah, they've got enough.
They're just floating around doing nothing. This is why last season, when the playoff final came around, I said I wanted Partick Thistle to stay up because I felt as though they offered more to the Premiership than Livingston. And yes, in the opening games of the season, that wee spell, I was proved completely wrong. And I thought they're offering something here. This could be shades of 2002 all over again. But the last kind of couple of months have just been boring.
Is the problem with being mid-table is it's that slight to mediocrity. You win some, lose some.
When it's regressing to the mean. So yeah. They had a ridiculously good start for them, which then meant they were safe and to take their foot off the gas. I mean, I think they've won one game since the night they beat Hearts 5-0, around just before Christmas time. I mean, that was such an incredible result, and that everyone was talking about Livingston at that point in the season, potentially even fighting for top six.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that now, but it's still, no matter what, it's been an incredible season for them, because if they stay up, no one really gave them a chance of doing that at the start of the season. And given through the manager change and everything.
It's all home form, right? It's 26 points at home. I mean, it must be something to do with
the pitch.
Right?
I mean, because of all the plastic, and we've been through the plastic pitch debate, that is the worst one. And it's the one that's most sort of recently laid and things.
What do you think? Is it players are just used to the bounce of that pitch, so they have an advantage?
Yeah, they must be able to train on it constantly and know how it works. I mean, it's one of the things that I would say is testament to how well Kilmarnock have done, because people talk about Kilmarnock got the plastic pitch, but actually until very recently their away form was better than the home form, so it wasn't just out in the pitch.
You look at the table and you look at the top, so Celtic Rangers fighting for the league, Aberdeen, Kelly Hearts fighting for Europe, Hibs, St Johnstone, Motherwell fighting for the top six kind of battle. And then you've got Livingston, and then below them, Hamilton, Dundee, and St Mirren all fighting against relegation in the playoffs. So Livingston are just the only ones that are just there.
At least they're safe.
They're just,
exactly.
Yeah, they're
that's
safe.
The price for overachieving early in the season.
Yeah, like,
by budget and by expectation, they should be fighting with those bottom three. Yeah. But they did so well that
and that's
fair
the reward,
play
I guess. But at the same time, their reward is at everyone else's detriment, because we're just sitting here going,
Kilmarnock 0, Motherwell 0. There was a cheeky bonus Premiership game, this one, at Rugby Park on Saturday. We previewed Kilmarnock versus Motherwell for last midweek like a bunch of idiots, because the game was then fogged off, mugging us off, fogging the game off, and rescheduled for Saturday. Killy were planning going to Tenerife, but to reschedule their flights, winless in 6 Premiership games.
And they weren't the only ones that had to reschedule flights.
Yeah, I ended up going to it at the last minute to help out as a kind of help out filming Motherwell on match days.
Oh yes, you were there.
So yeah, I went there last minute, flight up. Obviously there was a lot of change of plans across the board, because no one really thought there was going to be a game on that weekend from a Motherwell perspective, and I got blown to bits. I got soaked to bits, and by the end of the game, it was on the recordings of the footage, you probably just hear me laughing because it was just ridiculous. I was sodden, and
the hot weather was horrible.
The weather was ridiculous. There was no goals, and I said beforehand, this better be some sort of 4-3 classic or something, but it's probably going to be goalless. And stupidly enough, I didn't bother putting money on it, and it happened to be goalless.
I think Stephen Robinson did his post-match interview. I remember thinking, you've summed that up perfectly. He said it was basically, essentially, it's a fair draw. We did okay. They did okay.
Yeah, and they could have just taken that draw from the Wednesday night game and just agreed that's it.
Is this also a lesson not to cancel games in the fog? Games in the fog are great when you're there and
anything's happened.
Yeah, you have no idea what's happening. Then you hear something like cheers in the background. You're like, oh, we must have scored. Even with Kilmarnock, it's a bit. There's a better version of Livingston. It's regressing to the mean. Like Kilmarnock have again massively overachieved this season. So the fact of having a bit of a dip in form, there's no great surprise. And
sense, isn't it?
Budget wise, they still have far lower budget than like Hearts, for example, or below them in the table. I mean, I think there's also how much this has affected, I don't know, but cases like Jones, whose nose is off at the end of the season, there'll be quite a lot of players at Kilmarnock that they'll be looking to next season already, and are they going to stay there or move on? Is Clark even going to be there? It's gone a bit quiet on this now because Lennon's in charge, but there was talk of him for the Celtic job. I see that Fulham were also rumoured with him.
I've been really disappointed with Kelly recently, though, but I kind of feel the opposite of, or not quite overachieving this season. It's more they're just kind of letting themselves down at this stage of the season.
I think it's demoralising when you lose players like Stewart and you realise that, oh, it's not going to happen now.
Yeah, but that's one player. Surely that the loss of one player can't change their entire
Kilmarnock
season.
And so basically the whole point of Kilmarnock. No, the whole idea that the Kilmarnock play with this season is being very solid, being hard to beat, and then relying on moments of magic from Brophy, Jones and Stewart.
Yeah, but they've still got Brophy and Jones.
And one of them has gone. Another one has already signed to go to another club.
There's always that controversy. But then
Stewart made Brophy play well. That's why. So Brophy, without him, Brophy's certainly not the same player. Like I was saying, I've always said that his XG is really high because he's getting loads of chances. And it was mostly because Greg Stewart's expected assists was really high. So he was creating all these chances for Brophy. So now they don't have that. And that means that everything has a domino effect in another part of the team. So
it's true.
It's also, I think we know now, it's been one season too far for Chris Boyd.
But it's disappointing because the likes of...
Compared to last season, not very many.
It's disappointing because when Kilmarnock play the likes of Rangers, they always seem to do really well against them. Even Celtic, Steve Clark's taken a lot of points off both sides of the Old Firm, but then they're dropping points to Motherwell, they're dropping points to Livingston.
Yeah, but that goes back to what we're saying. The way they play is it suits to play that way against Celtic and Rangers, where you have no expectations, take the game to them, you can sit back and defend deep, and that's what they do well. But when the expectation is on them to try and take the game to the opposition a bit more, they find it a lot more difficult. Like Celtic losing to Valencia, and they compare the budgets and all that kind of stuff. Kilmarnock beating Celtic the number of times they did, or even being only a few points back until a couple of weeks ago, in terms of the multiples of budget, Celtic are way ahead of Kilmarnock's budget more than PSG are ahead of Celtic's budget.
Yeah.
And when Celtic go into the Champions League, we're constantly told, but it's impossible for them to compete because of the financial gulf. It's like just as big on the domestic front.
Yeah, I think the difference between Celtic's, I said this a few times before, but I think Celtic's wage bill is something like 900,000 and Aberdeen's is 130, for example. So the fact they were
And Aberdeen's would be much bigger than Kilmarnock's.
Exactly, much bigger. I would have liked it if they could have just kept going, but the league seems to have sort of middled out to what it should be.
I feel like I'm kind of seeing parallels here with the season that Dundee United had. Was it 2014-15? When they were challenging at the top, they were top for quite a while, and Celtic overtook them around Christmas time, and it was the first time Celtic had went top of the table at this point. And because Dundee United beat Celtic just before Christmas, and everyone was talking about, like, they were talking about Kilmarnock this season. Can they challenge? Can they keep it up for the rest of the season? And then in this transfer window in January, they lost Gary Mackay, Stephen and Stuart Armstrong, and completely capitulated. And that was it. And for the first half of the season, they were outstanding, and then just fizzled away into nothing. And I kind of feel like I'm seeing the same with Killy now.
Yeah, it's very difficult supporting a team that isn't one of the two big Glasgow ones, because basically life sucks most of the time, and then
when does the bubble burst?
And then for one decade Alex Ferguson turns up, but there you go. So the last Scottish Cup quarterfinal is between Park Thistle and Hearts, but obviously we're talking now in a Monday evening afternoon sort of bit, so it's kicking off tonight after we finish recording. But we'll say congratulations to Partick Thistle, or congratulations to Hearts, and our wonderful producer Charlie can just edit in whichever one that is. So I look cool.
What a hat trick from Connor Salmon. No one saw that coming.
So that's it from us. We'll be back next Monday. Although we said that last week, we did an emergency pod on the Tuesday. So hopefully Brendan Rodgers doesn't come back to Scotland.
When Jurgen Klopp resigns after his terrible run and Steven Gerrard takes over at Liverpool, we'll be back tomorrow.
Can you imagine? Well, that could happen. You never know. In the world of Scottish football, is fantastic. But we'll definitely be here on Monday after Celtic have played Aberdeen and Hibs have played Rangers. So we'll speak to you then.
You've been listening to the Totally Scottish Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com, and be sure to check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.